us on a Sunday morning. We have Ron Woda here, the bench coach of the Giants, and Billy Hayes, who we've been waiting to have in the bunker here, catching guru and coach for the Giants as well. Guys, good morning. How are you? Well, start with you.
Yeah, I'm doing great, Marty. It's good to be here. It's nice to have Billy alongside us here this morning.
Yeah, Marty. And first of all, I'd like to say Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there.
Absolutely.
Especially my mom. She's down in Florida right now with her sisters, but Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there.
Yeah, you know, and I told the story before you guys came in. I mean, my mother, I took her to a game in 1956, and Carl Erskine no-hit the Giants that day. I mean, I'll never forget that.
Wow, no, that's great. Now, I was thinking about that yesterday. I was, you know, a lot of moms love baseball, and obviously if the sons love a sport, moms are so supportive, they're gonna want to go. But I was joking with Dan Martin watching the Red Sox game. I said, how many of those husbands there today are going to say, hey, honey, the kids want to take you to the Red Sox game today? You know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, yeah. But I bet a lot of that goes on.
Yeah. Billy, you growing up, how was your mother? And now I know when you got drafted, she screamed down to the cellar that you were first-round pick of the Cubs.
Yeah, that was the intercom system, right. the heating system. But no, they were at every football game, baseball game, basketball game, and matter of fact, driving in this morning thinking about that, I called my mom. I wasn't able to reach her. And my grandmother used to go to Denver all the time when we played the Denver Bears. And I don't want to say she got in fights, but somebody would say, hey, Hayes, you stink, you know, in so many choice words. And she'd proceed to go up four or five rows and give her, you know, give this guy a piece of her mind. So, but the moms are great. They were at everything and made lunches and all that stuff. So, you know, we're all very proud of them.
How about getting the uniforms ready? You know, as a kid, you know, the uniform had to get ready and had to be ready early in the morning.
Oh, yeah. You didn't want to go to practice with it dirty, right? from the last day. Like Billy said, I mean, you kind of take it for granted when you're a young person, you know, but all the work that moms do, as you said, getting the uniform ready, cooking for you. I mean, yeah. Anytime we were hungry, food was there for you, and that was a big part of, you know, how we grew up, family and food. And I wish my mom a happy Mother's Day today as well. She's back in Connecticut. I don't think the blowtorch reaches out there, but
we go to Utah about that. Yeah, okay. About Utah, that's about as far. But yesterday on the show last night, we got into the baseball gloves and the first glove, and really it was overwhelming, the response and the emails that I got. And you guys, first gloves, baseball gloves, I mean, they've got to be important to you, Billy. The catcher's glove. Now, you're a catcher. I've got a couple of those old circle gloves at home, but tell us a little bit about your history with gloves.
Well, it was good because I listened to the quad a bit yesterday, Marty, and it brought up a lot of memories about your glove when you were a kid. And like Ronnie said earlier, we were talking off air, I don't really remember my first glove, but I do remember something that was brought up yesterday several times, and it was a product called Neat's Foot Oil.
What is it?
My dad still can't figure it out. Put this stuff on my glove, and I think it weighed 12 pounds by the time it was over with. But who knows what was in that stuff? That's just what you used. And nowadays, I don't use anything on a glove. Some guys have unique ways of doing it. Matheny used to put his catcher's mitts in water and tie them up with a couple baseballs and put them in front of a little heater that Murph had and dry them that way. But you know, there's all kinds of tricks to the trade. I never did anything but put saddle soap in mine and use it.
Really? Now, for a catcher's glove, I guess you really got to work it, right?
Yeah, Rawlings is what I use, and they seem to make a pretty stiff glove. It takes a while to break them in. That's like Buster and Q. They both have a couple gloves ready to go in case one breaks, you know. But it does take a while to break them in, and it's not playing catch with one of your fellow coaches either. It needs to be a little firmer than that.
Well, Neat's Foot Oil, did you have that in Connecticut? What do you use?
No, you know what? I've never even heard of it, believe it or not. Well, we didn't have money for any of that type of stuff when I was growing up. We just used it to break it in. And then, you know, finally when I got a little culture and got a little bit older and started in pro ball out of high school, obviously I went to the mink oil. The mink oil, you pick that up with the saddle soap, like Billy said. Yeah, you get it at a shoe place or a saddle, you know, the saddle soap and the mink oil. They use them on saddles and all that stuff. And that's what we went to in pro ball, and we used that for the most part. But I do, now that you mention it, the thing that I remember using when I was in high school was the old Rawlings glove oil that you poured out of the can.
Right.
And as Billy said, it made your glove really, really heavy. You know, it's not ideal what you want to use. You want to keep your glove light, and it would just soak into the leather, and the thing would weigh about 10 pounds.
I think they did that so they didn't have to buy us another glove, because I don't think you could ever tear that leather after that Neatsfoot oil was on there.
Well, you know, you talked about the circle glove. Some of the fans understand it. A catcher today is a glove almost like a first baseman's glove, right? You know, it's very flexible.
Well, yeah, they have a hinge in it.
Yeah, the old circle glove. Describe that for the fans so they understand, because you've used this to catch somebody.
A circle catcher's mitt is what they used, what they started to use when, I guess, when the game started. It's basically a big piece of leather with a bunch of pad around, like, the heel of your hand.
Right.
A little bit of a web there, and just basically a hole in the middle of the glove, and it has no way to bend, like in half, say, where there's a hinge at the bottom of your hand, like down toward your pinky. So this thing is basically a two-handed glove, and that's probably why you see a lot of those old catchers with broken fingers and everything, because it's just not going to stick in there. You almost have to put your other hand over it to keep the ball in there.
You ever catch anybody with it?
I did catch Jamie Wright with it one time, and I was a little paranoid of what was going to happen. Man, he's got a big sinker, and it went okay, but it's definitely something that you have to kind of get used to. You know, I played catch with it a bunch before I did it, and just to play catch, you know, with one of the coaches when we get loose to throw BP, you know, you almost have to give with the ball quite a bit. And now you see catchers kind of sticking the ball and holding it, and that really didn't happen back then.
Wow. You know, I remember my uncle Abe, who got me into baseball, you know, he was the one who got me into it. He had one of those old-time gloves, you know, with the fingers open.
Right.
And he used to play at the schoolyard in Brooklyn, you know, and on the cement all the time. But you must have. Did your dad have a glove in the family glove?
Did
that get passed on to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I don't have. My brother has it back in Connecticut right now. But, you know, I just asked him about it the other day because I heard the show yesterday, and got me thinking, you know, I'd like to see that glove. I've seen a couple of them brought out here to the field in the past. But, you know, my dad's glove was very similar to the Billy's describing the catcher's glove. It's, you know, it's just a pad. There's fingers, thick fingers on the glove, unlike the catcher's glove. But there's no strings in between. So, you know, that's why those old timers, they did have to use two hands. I mean, if you caught the ball in the palm, it would stick. But, you know, a lot of balls, you got to use two hands together to secure that thing. And there's no web. There's no extra area to catch the ball. So, boy, you know, and they were pretty good using those gloves. If our guys had to use those today, that game would be, there'd be a lot more errors on it.
Well, you couldn't make a play in the hole. I mean, forget that. I mean, I remember seeing pictures of Phil Rizzuto go in the hole and jump up, throw to first. I don't know how he did it. Pee Wee Reese used to do that. Maybe by the 50s, the gloves are a little tighter so you could do it.
Yeah, that'd be good to see. I don't know if they have it across the street over here. You know, there's a
the Babe.
Yeah, the display they have over there. If they have any
the
history of the gloves,
yeah, the Bay Area baseball exhibit, Alan Byers exhibit over
right,
there was
right,
pretty good.
Yeah.
Did it have a name on it? Now, you know, when I grew up, I said I had the Ted Kluszewski glove. That was my glove. You remember any names on the gloves?
No, not on my dad's glove. But when we were in high school and we got our gloves, that was real important to us, right? What was the name on the glove? You know, you had Johnny Bench. Or,
who'd
you know? Carl Yastrzemski, you know, Rico Petrocelli. You know, those are the guys I was looking for being a Red Sox fan.
Who'd you end up with?
Probably
Jim
yes.
Pagliaroni. Or
probably yes. He had more gloves out there with his name on
That's
it.
True.
Than the other guys.
Billy, glove. What was your first glove? You remember?
You know, it was obviously it was a catcher's mitt, I believe, because I didn't do anything else but catch. And I think it was a Johnny Bench. The one I can remember that did have a name in it. Now I may have had something prior to that, but you know. I think that's probably what it was Johnny Bench.
Well, the gloves today, do they require that much care, Woe, in breaking in a glove today?
Well,
the motor, and someone called in yesterday said he put motor oil on the glove,
well,
you know?
There's a lot of different things you can do. I wouldn't recommend motor oil, but you know what? Like Billy said earlier, Rawlings makes a stiffer glove. It's a great glove, and they do take a little bit more time to break in. I used Wilson most of my career, and in an infield glove with Wilson, I'd go through a couple a season because they were a softer, you know, soft. They weren't just softer leather, but they were maybe a little bit thinner. They didn't have as much, you know, firmness to the glove. So would they get wobbly a little bit quicker? Mizuno was a little bit firmer. So it all depends on the manufacturer of the glove. Some break in quicker. Some don't need that much work to break them in.
Well, Billy, your glove that you use now, did you have to break that in a certain way? What did you do to get it?
Just use it.
Did it have
Marty.
A name on it?
No.
Not even your name?
No.
Come on.
No, it's got my number somewhere in a magic marker on there somewhere. But, you know, like Ronnie was saying, it's you just use them. Yeah. I mean, there's, it's kind of, I guess, what you're used to growing up. And I never really did anything with any glove. The one I have now and the ones I'll continue to get, you take them out of the box and use them. And wow. Once the laces get a little bit loose, you end up tightening them up. And I think the one thing that, you know, for people out there, some kids may like a stiffer glove and some kids may like a little softer glove. And I think guys at this level here, even high school and college, when you're smaller, it's probably good to have a little flimsier of a glove so it'll stay in there. But the speed of the ball picks up. So I think everybody now, especially myself, you want a glove that's kind of stiff and yet there's a good pocket in it. And once you get that, there's your A game right there. You know, that's the one, that's your gamer. You know, you don't let anybody else put their hand
Nobody
in it.
Nobody touches it, right?
No, you don't touch it. But, you know, and that's what happens. I think now most guys want a little bit stiffer of glove with a nice pocket. Once it gets flimsy and Crawford has to go in the backhand in a hole in his glove, you know, sometimes it may just go right through, right, Ronnie?
Absolutely. You know, as he said, you don't mess with it. And as we did when we were playing, I mean, we spent – you know, hours, you know, like you said, tightening the strings. The only thing I would do once in a while, and I know Billy does it too, is you put a little, you know, Vaseline, if you had the mink oil in the pocket, or if it starts to dry out a little bit, you put a little bit on. But you don't overuse the oil. It's using the glove and taking care of it. You don't leave it out in the yard in the rain, right? You make sure it's in the house. We used to put a ball in it to keep pocket. That's important. Even now when you travel, they make things you can put in your glove. You put your, you know, glove in your travel bag. Well, they have these things that'll keep the shape of the pocket, a plastic thing you can put in your glove. But all we would do is put a baseball, one or two balls in the glove so it doesn't get, you know, smashed and bent out of shape while you're traveling.
I used to go to sleep with the glove in my bed. I did. Well, I mean, you know, it's part of baseball for me. I used to have a cap gun under my pillow because Hopalong Cassidy told me to do that. But I used to have my glove.
Well, you're going way back. Now, what year did you stop sleeping with your glove? That's my question.
Probably 10.
That's 10. Okay.
I'll be politically correct here. But all right. The last thing on the glove. Today that I've seen, gloves can be taken apart. In other words, you like the pocket. You could have another pocket put in. If you like the webbing, that stays. I couldn't believe it. I saw that a few years ago.
Well, you know, Murph is real close with all those guys that deal in the gloves. And, you know, if a guy wants something else redone on his glove or it starts to rip a little bit, they'll give it to Murph. He'll send it in. And a new pocket or a new back part of the glove or a new webbing or a different style of webbing can be put in there. And you ought to see Murph work on a glove.
Really?
Murph can take the stitches completely out of a glove and just relace the whole thing in a matter of an hour.
Wow.
You know. And that's not easy to do. Things are crossing and laying over, and where does it start and where does it end, you know? But when you do something like that, you really have to appreciate what Murph does with that glove when you hand it to him. And it comes back brand new.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah, it's
what
interesting because, you know, the guys can get another glove. It may take a couple weeks or a week. It depends, you know, how quickly they can get it. But, you know, they're superstitious. You know, you have a glove that you like. You know, there's nothing better than a glove that you like and you've used and you've had success with it. So, you know, the guys today sometimes choose to fix them up opposed to just ordering a new one and having to break it in. The worst glove I've ever seen, the condition of it that was used in the big leagues was back when I was first got to the major leagues, and Amos Otis, who was in major league camp, he was at the end of his career, an outfielder with the Pirates. And this glove had to be, you know, 20, 30 years old, and the whole pocket was gone. So when he put his hand in the glove, you know, he had a batting glove on under the glove. You'd see his batting glove. There's no palm in the glove, but the web and everything was fine. And he kept using that glove. So in today's game, he could have gave it to Murphy, could have had a new pocket put in and kept the glove.
I love it. Well, great story. I love the stuff about the gloves. And it touched everybody. You know, it's one of those moments of baseball. If I don't care if you play softball or whatever, you don't even play anymore. That first glove with the name on it, I'll never forget Ted Klazuski. And I started cutting the sleeves off my shirt because that's what he did, the big power hitter for the Cincinnati Reds.
You need to spend some more time in a weight room, Marty.
I'm giving you a lot of my childhood.
Yeah,
there,
Marty, we did this. We did the same thing. Come on. We used to go in the backyard. We'd play wiffle ball all day long. And you'd go through the lineup, just as kids do, and you would,
emulate the
stance of every guy. If it was a left-handed hitter, you'd hit left-handed, right-handed. And I tell you, that was part of learning the game of baseball and working with your hand-eye coordination, whether it's a hard ball or a wiffle ball. And we were just kids having fun, and that's the way it was.
Do you think that happens much nowadays, Marty, kids doing that?
Probably not on a percentage basis. Probably a little bit less because of all the other sports going on that people, you know, soccer and all the other stuff. But if you're in baseball, if you're a kid that likes baseball, they're doing exactly what we did as kids. There's no question that gets passed on from the families of generations. There's no doubt in my mind. Hey, you guys go to Toronto next week. So Interleague starts. So number one, going through customs. And you guys used to go to Montreal. Now you go to Toronto. Are you ready for this? Do they pat you down? And what's it like going through customs for you guys?
You know, I think they'll probably take a few of us off the plane at a time. Or once we get off the plane, we'll go through customs. You know, obviously one by one, but I think they'll probably have a pretty structured deal set up, and you just make sure you got your passport and go through.
You know, the good news probably is we'll probably be getting in the middle of the night. There shouldn't be much of a line to get through there. I mean, it is a huge international city, so maybe there will be. I don't know what time we're due to arrive, but it's going to be in the early morning, and I think we'll get through there a lot quicker. You know, sometimes you run into customs, and the lines are, you know, they're huge. But, you know, Brett, our traveling secretary, does a tremendous job, and I'm sure he'd somehow get us our own line and get us through that thing quick.
Well, I guess you guys fly tonight. After the game?
Right after the game, yeah.
Brian Sabian tells a story, you know, all the hijinks of baseball with Bill Stoneman. Remember Bill Stoneman, the general manager of the Angels? And somehow they got something going with Ned Colletti and a rivalry, and they alerted customs that he's coming through with something, and they took him off the plane, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you guys have your moments, I must tell you.
Well, we do have our moments, and, you know, that brings me back. I've never seen that here in the major leagues. We don't mess around with that stuff. But I know in the minor leagues, where we used to have a lot of problems, was traveling by bus from Tacoma to Vancouver. Or anytime you went into Canada and you're going by bus, you used to tell all the players, especially the Latin players, because a lot of them years ago didn't have the proper documentation. So everybody keep your mouth shut, you know, don't say a word, be very respectful. And sure enough, when the agent would come on the bus, you'd stop at the checkpoint, somebody would say something smart, and here we go, he'd check everybody. And now 3 hours later, you're on your way, but you lost three Latin players because they're being held because they didn't have the proper identification.
The bus is completely unloaded underneath, they're going through everything, lost your starting pitcher and your shortstop and your right fielder.
Yeah. All right, so Interleague, you got to do some prep. I mean, everybody's played Interleague. I think there's only a couple of teams that haven't. I've said this on the show. I think Interleague is very important to you guys because you could pitch. And you look at the Dodgers, Arizona, these other teams, they've struggled. We've seen the Yankees play. Tampa Bay has beaten San Diego. Arizona had trouble in New York. I think Interleague for you is very important. And what sort of prep are you getting ready for? And I think the 20 games you have are critical for this division.
Yeah, they are. I mean, obviously the biggest difference is the DH, you know. I mean, you look at your lineup and you say, okay, now we get to use the DH, at least on the road games. And who is that guy going to be? So you want a viable candidate to do that. And I think for us, the National League club, it gives us an opportunity if you don't have, you know, that set DH, which, you know, we'll probably be matching up And the other part of it, Boach will probably say, hey, let's give this guy a day off, let him DH and put the better defender in, or give the guy a little bit of a blow so you know, he don't get that opportunity, so they can DH opposed to play the field. So I think those are the biggest things internally we look at when we're making out a lineup and thinking about going in. But, you know, the other side is the preparation. I mean, here we're going up to Toronto. We don't see them. So it's a little bit more work and time on our end getting to know these guys, because we don't see them every day like we do the teams in our league.
Billy, strategy is different. Even for you, if you're down in the pen getting relievers ready, you know, the starter can stay in there. You don't have to pinch hit for anybody. So I say today against Atlanta, Lincecum, pitch everybody. You probably may not need as many relievers in the American League because you stay in there.
Absolutely, Marty. The, you know, the, it takes the bun away pretty much.
That's right.
You know, you're not per se going to have that easy out from a, having the pitcher up there with, you know, in a hitting situation. But the bunt's pretty much gone for the most part, I think, especially the way the American League plays. And, you know, at that point, you're – you are kind of sitting there going, well, the, when's the pitcher hitting? Well, he's not hitting.
Yeah.
So they get extended a little bit. And on the flip side, our guy now has to get nine guys out instead of eight in the pitcher.
Yeah. Different. Different. You know, yeah. You know, you got to change your mindset on this thing. And, you know, we go through it every year. Now it's spread all over the season.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how that plays out. If it's good for the game, you know, I think it's good for everybody. And interleague is good for the game. But now, you know, that Houston's in the other league, and as you said, some teams opened up in interleague play.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a little bit odd. It's going to take some getting used to. Just like we have to go, you know, in September, we have to go play the New York Yankees with, you know, 2 weeks left in the season. And we didn't have to do that in the past. It's going to be a little bit strange, but... you know, that's the way it is now, so it's different.
I know you guys got to get to work, and one more thought for you. The umpires, and I'm not asking you to rip umpires or whatever, but the system, something's happening here with this replay where it didn't work the other night, the home run in Cleveland, they didn't call it. But the more important thing was the next day with Bo Porter in Houston. I mean, you know, he goes out to the mound and makes a pitching change. Socha changes hitters. Bo Porter goes back to the mound and makes another pitching change before the pitcher has faced one batter. So, all right, so they get confused, but four umpires can't figure that out. Has the rule changed? I mean, this goes back to Little League, right?
Well, you know, Billy has managed in the minor leagues as I have, and Billy's managed a lot more games than I have, and we were talking about it yesterday. We just looked at each other and couldn't believe that that would happen. You know, it's one of the staples in the game. It's not something you learn. It's just something you know. I mean, when you just start managing or you start umpiring, that's the foundation of the game. Otherwise, you could keep switching guys every time. Right. You know, you could go through your whole pitching staff. And it's surprising. And I know that a lot of talk is going around about that and about the replay. And, you know, that's all good. Hopefully, we'll get better at the rules of the game. So these things don't happen and make it unfair for one club.
How do you stand on replay, Billy? Do you like it? Do you want it expanded? What do you think about it?
You know, I think it's – the way I look at it right now, I think it's gone far enough. I mean, okay. Down the line, I mean, you don't want somebody, an electronic machine, calling balls and strikes. There is human error. There's human error on both sides, you know. It's not easy to go play shortstop as smoothly as Crawford will do, or catch and throw like Buster can do. And it's not easy to umpire either, but, you know, these guys, it's a tough job. They're not going to win on either side. And I guess the thing that puzzles me sometimes is they always say they want to get it right. And if there's four guys there, you should be able to get it right, whether it's a fair foul call down the line on a bunt or something, you know, or it hits the chalk down the line, you know. Well, if you see it, you see it and get the thing right, but... You know, those men have a very tough job, and they're very good at what they do.
Yeah, I can't get Greg Elliott to put chalk on the lines. He just won't do it. He won't do it.
I'd have to do that every day then, right?
That's correct. Then he'd have to work here. No,
I had an
umpire
in the minor leagues one day tell me when they use chalk, because it just brought up something. One of our guys hit the ball down the line, and I could see a little bit of the chalk fly up, and the guy called it foul. So I think it was probably an A-ball guy, and – So I ran out there and I said, "Hey, you didn't, the ball's fair." And he goes, "Well, only a little chalk flew up. And I just turned around and walked away.
Eddie Montague said yesterday, we love Eddie. Yeah. He said if they come back with electronic, like Billy described, electronic balls and strikes, he'll make a comeback. He said he doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do anything.
He says he's coming back if they do that.
Yeah, well, I hope they don't. You know, I'm with Billy on this thing. I mean, the beauty, I guess I'm a traditionalist. You know, you grew up playing the game, and, you know, so many things have changed, really. Subtleties. Look at, you have replay now, you didn't have it before. You know, where do you draw the line? There's four umpires. The human element is a big part in this game, in coaching and in umpiring. And if the four guys on the field can't get it right, you know, there's something wrong. I like the home run, the calls that they have now, but we just have to get those right. And there's some talk of doing it about, like hockey does, that they take it out of the hands of the umpires on the field. It goes back to New York, and there's a crew or there's a guy that's in charge of that makes that ruling. And whether that happens, that's fine. But to keep running off the field to view other plays, I think it would get a little bit much.
Well, I think that's going to happen. I think you hit the nail on the head. You don't, the four guys disappear, and they're looking at a monitor as big as like a you know, an iPhone or something. You know, it's not like, you know, NASA. Yeah, so it's a very tough thing to do. Hey, Atlanta, the Giants. This is you know, these two teams could meet later on. This is a good series so far.
Yeah, great.
I mean, Giants playing well. You know, the blueprint is happening. But I could, you know, I love the pitching on both sides, the pen, swinging for the fences, Giants moving the line along. This is a good series so far.
Well, it's a tough series. There's no question when they came in and saw them the first night. I mean, you know, they don't have Hayward right now. I think a couple pitchers that are valuable to them are on the DL. That's an outstanding team over there. And, you know, they beat us the first night, and we knew we were going to be in for a dogfight. And to win the last 2 days is really a good sign. For us to play them well, because as you said, this team's going to be there at the end. If they're not there at the end, I'd be very surprised.
Yeah. Me too.
Exactly. I mean, they're dangerous through the lineup. Even though they could take a bad swing, the next swing, you know, can be put in the gap pretty simple. And you get into their bullpen in the eighth and ninth inning, and it's pretty tough. I mean, that guy Kimbrel at the end, he's no easy day at the beach. And I'm telling you, the breaking balls he was throwing the other night on top of 96 were just disappearing. And you know, that's tough duty when you got to go up there and try to get a base hit off that guy.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for coming in, Billy. You know, we want you all the time. You know, right? Well,
absolutely.
He's got all the phrases down.
Well, Billy's good at this. I think he could have his own show. Matter of fact, he has one in the coach's room. And many times he's got his own show. If you ask the other coaches.
Well, let's see what they put up on the wall when you guys walk in today, because they always put something up on the wall about it. But thanks for coming in. It's always a pleasure. Fans love it, and it's the best thing I do. So, Billy
thanks,
Hayes.
Marty.
And Ronnie Wotus, thanks
so
much.
My pleasure, Marty.
All right, more coming up on KNBR 680, the sports leader.